At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight, I have two terrifying stories told in the rain. Whether it's nighttime, daytime, or early morning, tonight, it's pouring, and things happen. Also, a shout out to the authors, CIA Herpes, and also The Eagle Strikes. He has a YouTube called Black Volumes. It's in the description box down below. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. I remember the first time I heard about the plague ship. I had a friend named Shannon who, despite the name, was a guy. Not just any guy, though. He was a nerdy, overweight, socially awkward guy who happened to be the son of a state senator. Both Shannon and I had recently graduated high school, and we wanted a trip to remember it by. He didn't really have a lot of friends besides me, so he would often throw ideas at me for a party or a trip. Seeing as I sold weed back in high school, I had plenty of friends, or at least people who would hang out and call themselves friends. "How about the plague ship?" Shannon asked me through a mouthful of home fries as I sat in a diner booth across from him. He ordered enough food for three people, including chicken steaks and turkey pot pies and bacon, and to my growing horror, he had eaten all of it in a single sitting. I had a coffee and a bagel. I sat there wondering how he didn't throw up. "The plague what?" I asked, raising an eyebrow. "What's that? Some new video game?" Shannon laughed a high-pitched, womanly sound that caused the rolls of fat on his neck to jiggle and dance.
"Oh no," he said. "A video game? Definitely not. It is real, man. My dad told me about it, and I did a little research." Now I was intrigued. I leaned closer across the table, feeling the wispy heat from the coffee rising towards my face. "Your dad knows about it, huh? Tell me everything you know." And he did, though it wasn't much. According to rumors his father had heard, the Coast Guard, police boats, and fishermen in the area kept encountering an unknown vessel. From eyewitness accounts, it looked ancient and battered. The staves of the hull had rotted holes covered with black mold. The mold sent out tendrils that seemed to grasp and flex across the outside of the ship like clenching fingers. The sails of the boat had coarse black stitches running in irregular square patches up and down it. A strange white kind of leather composed the sails, which witnesses claimed looked like human skin. Dozens of skulls tied to ropes jingled from the masthead, cracking into each other with the hollow smacks like wind chimes from hell. And at the top of the masthead, like the angel of a Christmas tree, a crucified, decaying body hung, silver nails biting deeply into its wrists and ankles to secure it forever to the post. "That sounds like an urban legend," I said, rolling my eyes. "That's like all those legends about the Mary Celeste still roaming the seas with her ghost sailors." "But that's not all," Shannon said, lowering his voice into a fox spooky campfire tone. His magnified eyes behind his glasses looked owlish, roaming around the diner as if looking for something and not finding it. There were deaths and disappearances. The people who saw the ship claimed that it had walking corpses, men with slit throats and pale, waterlogged skin who abduct anyone who sees the ship. One man apparently escaped by shooting his captor and jumping overboard. The Coast Guard vessel ended up finding him near the flaming ruins of his boat a few hours later. He said they killed everyone else in horrible ways, skinned them, crucified them, keel-hauling them, everything. He said they burned his wife alive on the ship. "What does keel-hauling mean?" I asked. He shook his head. "You really don't want to know. It's like the sailor's version of skinning, I guess. Using sharp barnacles on the side of the ship. They strip the person naked, then drag the person's back up and down over the edges of the shell. And like hundreds of little razor blades, they just scrape into the flesh." He shuddered. "I don't know who thinks up these punishments." I thought about his idea of going out to find this mysterious ghost ship. I had no doubt in my mind that the entire story was probably a load of bullcrap, but it would be fun to get out on the ocean. "Okay, let's do it," I said, grinning. "We should get a few people together and go out and find this cursed ship. I'm sure it will be a trip worth remembering." We had asked around in a circle of friends and found a few who knew about boats and sailing. Travis, a friend of mine who towered over the rest of us and who constantly smelled like weed, told us his dad had been in the Navy and had taught him all sorts of useless crap about boating. He even told us his dad had a boat in the ocean port not too far from where all the activity of this supposed ghost ship had been spotted, and that he would let us use it if we filled it with gas and gave his father a few $100 for wear and tear. Seeing as most boat rental agencies charged anywhere from $200 to $700 an hour around my area, I was instantly on board with the idea of paying much less. And that's how I found myself on a white sparkling cabin cruiser with Shannon, Travis, and two other friends who volunteered to come on the trip. A pair of identical twins I knew named Leslie and Sadie. The name of the boat shone on the side in bright silver letters. The Sea Lady. A couple weeks after Shannon had first proposed the idea, we set off a couple of hours before sunset, deciding to do some night boating to see the endless expanse of the Atlantic under the dark summer sky. And if we came across the ghost ship, so much the better, but I wasn't holding my breath. We set off from the port. The exclamations of multiple excited voices reverberated over the open water. The cabin cruiser was slightly crowded with 5 people, but it wasn't too bad. I brought a couple of ounces of magic mushrooms and quite a bit of cannabis edibles and flour. Some of the others had brought their own stuff, mostly booze. I decided to wait to pass out the mushrooms. If we were all tripping, it might get hard the boat, and I didn't want to end up stranded on the ocean waiting to come down. I went around and gave some of the weed gummies out to everyone, though the people pulled out beer and started drinking. Someone gave me a bottle of Spaten. "This is going to be so awesome," Shannon said, his huge eyes gleaming with excitement behind his glasses. His irises looked red, his eyes half closed. I could tell he didn't usually eat edibles. Someone had turned on the radio, and Led Zeppelin echoed across the endless ocean. The sun had started to set, red streaks setting out across the sky. "You know," Travis said, coming up to us, "there's an old sailor's legend that red streaks at sunset are good luck. Red streaks at sunrise are bad luck. Apparently, scientists found out that it's true. A bloody sunrise sometimes means a storm is coming, and with most winds going in a westerly direction." "Yeah, I really don't care," I said. A shark's fin broke the water nearby, circling the boat. It snapped at something under the dark surface, and a cloud of bright red blood rose up, expanding like smoke through the shadowy water. "I didn't know we had sharks around here." Leslie and Sadie had joined us. They were both thin, with eyes so pale blue they looked almost colorless. Dirty blonde hair ran down their backs. They were not, thankfully, dressed identically, because I would have found that somewhat creepy. Leslie had some expensive...
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Designer clothing, while Sadie wore a shirt for some heavy metal band called Samuel. I ended up passing out the mushrooms to everyone soon after. Shannon said he didn't want any, but everyone else ate a handful. I chewed the dried stalks with an expression of disgust, choking it down with a bottle of Coke. "There are sharks everywhere," Travis said, staring at the fins splicing the water as it receded into the distance. "They're nature's alpha predators. They almost never get cancer, and they could keep regrowing their teeth when they lose them. Their teeth actually face inwards, like barbs that grab the prey and keep it from escaping or thrashing around too much." Shannon piloting the boat, driving like an old lady across the open expanse of ocean. I saw the last red rays of the sun disappearing over the horizon, like drops of blood washing away in the rain. "It's empty out here," Sadie said, taking a sip from her beer as she looked up at the night sky. "And you can see all the stars. There's no clouds. They're all so bright out here." "Is it normal not to see any other boats?" I asked Travis. He shrugged. "I guess. I don't really come out at nighttime, though. My dad took me fishing at night a few times when I was a kid, and I still remember seeing Coast Guard and police boats occasionally, though," Travis said. As I stared at him, I realized his face appeared to be changing colors, growing orange and red hues. I looked around, confused. On the horizon, I saw a boat on fire. Long fingers of flame reached upwards towards the sky, sending out billowing black plumes of choking smoke. The sky became covered with an expanding dark cloud that blotted out the stars and the moon.
"Giselle!" Leslie shouted, breaking my trance.
"What if there's people on there?" "Then they're probably dead," Travis said blankly, seemingly entranced by the flickering, dancing fire on the seemingly infinite expanse of shadowy water. "But maybe people jumped out before it spread. Maybe they're just over there, treading water and waiting for help. We need to check it out." Shannon had stopped the boat and got up clumsily from his seat, tripping and falling over a coiled rope. I helped him up. "Can't we just call the Coast Guard for help?" Sadie asked. Travis jumped up and ran towards the driver's seat. He twisted some dials until he grunted with satisfaction, then depressed the speaker's button and began shouting into it. "Mayday, mayday, mayday, this is the Sea Lady. Our position is..." He looked down at some electronic compass and rattled off some list of coordinates. "We have spotted a burning ship nearby. We don't know if there are any survivors. Please send rescue as soon as possible." He repeated the message a couple of times, but I heard no response. A chill ran down my spine as I waited in the silence, only the static hissing of the speaker and the rhythmic splashing of the waves breaking it. I thought I may have heard garbled fragments of random words in the white noise, but it might have been my imagination or perhaps an effect of the psilocybin. Travis started to pilot the ship over towards the burning wreckage, driving much faster than Shannon had. The waves raced past us, topped with the white foamy caps. The salty air seemed to revive me, but I also noticed the first rising vibes of the mushrooms starting to take over. I felt anxious, my chest tight. I didn't want to potentially see burnt and blackened bodies right now. The stars seemed to dance in a circling patterns of colorful light. I saw Mars overhead, looking down on us like a bleeding eye. Venus seemed to have spikes of white light spiraling around its bright center. Travis rapidly decelerated, throwing me forwards. I realized I had gotten lost in a trance for a little bit. I looked around nervously, seeing that we were almost at the burning craft. The fire seemed to have died down somewhat, though more black smoke than before obscured our view. It hovered over the water and blotted out the sky like some great cosmic dragon as it rose high above us. Hanging off the side of the deck, I saw the burnt body of a person. Whether male or female, I could no longer tell. It didn't look like much more than charcoal at this point, the blackened arms still reaching over the rails as if asking for help. Travis continued to repeat his message on the radio. I couldn't tell if the transmission was getting through or not, but I was not hopeful. Only garbled fragments of words came through every few minutes, and we couldn't tell who it was or what they were saying. It might just be picking up some random signals from different sources for all we knew. We had no idea if help was on the way. "Oh my God," Leslie said, putting her hand over her mouth as she noticed the body laying over the railing. The ship looked like a fishing vessel, significantly longer than our cabin cruiser. It still had a net trailing behind its shattered, burning carcass. "I'm gonna circle it slowly," Travis yelled from his seat at the controls. "Look for anyone swimming or treading water in the area. Look for any signs of life jackets or anything, if there are survivors." But we never got to finish the thought. From a distance, I heard water splashing as something large spliced through the rippling waves. I saw a huge black silhouette moving in our direction. Rotted boards as an impaled body posed as a figurehead broke through the clouds of black smoke. The haze parted, and in that moment, I saw a ship that looked straight out of a nightmare. The keel rose out of the water like a black scab. The sails caught the wind, and it was exactly as Shannon had told me. Dark, ugly stitches ran across the massive sails, which looked to be made of a strange kind of white leather, the exact hue of human skin. Hundreds of human skulls hung from chains and ropes attached to the mastheads, smashing against each other with dull cracking sounds. I saw strips of rotting flesh still attached to some, writhing tendrils of something dark brown and alive wrapped around the hull, flexing and relaxing like enormous muscles. I saw many holes eaten into the keel and the hull, but some strange fungus or whatever it was covered them in horizontal strips. A sickening figurehead stuck out of the front of the ship. I saw a rotting female body, impaled through the stomach with a sharp metal spear. The bloody point emerged from her mouth. Her blue lips froze and some eternal scream. The decomposing flesh hung off in strips, waving in the breeze like some grotesque flag. Her eyes stared blankly, still open, cloudy death cataracts covering them, giving them a faded look. Human silhouettes gazed over the sides of the craft at us. I looked up and met the white, glistening eye of one as it stared blankly down. I immediately wished I hadn't. It had white, mirrored eyes like a raccoon caught in the headlights of a car. I saw colorless gray skin hanging loose off the bones. Some of them had deep slash marks on their throats or faces, while others had holes blown in their stomachs and chests. They all had weapons in their hands and stood as still as statues, grinning down at us as the ship sped towards the Sea Lady. "Get us away, Travis!" Sadie screamed, running over to where Travis sat in the cockpit, sweating heavily despite the fierce ocean wind. Travis, one diamond earring sparkled and glistened as he furiously pushed the boat towards its upper limit. Shannon walked over to my side, staring at me with his huge eyes, his fat, soft body quivering with terror. "I can't believe it's real," Shannon whispered. The plague ship drew nearer, moving in a blur through the smoke. The engine whined and shrieked as Travis pushed the Sea Lady to its upper limit.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But as I looked back, the ship seemed to loom larger and larger, and I thought of the shark's fin we had seen racing across the ocean towards some smaller fish. Now we were the fish, and I knew without a doubt that the shark had found us. The ship smashed into the Sea Lady with a shrieking of tearing metal. It felt like an earthquake under my feet. I got thrown violently across the deck, smashing my face into the railing. I saw a violent explosion of colors in my vision, purples and blacks and dark reds flowing down and dripping in kaleidoscope tunnels. The mushrooms had fully kicked in. A rising sense of total panic shook my soul. Travis was standing next to me, blood dripping from his nose. He hauled me up to my feet. He started screaming something in my ear, but all I could hear were hundreds of gallons of water rushing into the boat and, behind that, the ticking of an engine, like some massive mechanical heart undergoing cardiac arrest. Finally, the engine died with a loud groan. The plague ship had turned and begun to circle back to where our boat stood in the water, as stranded as a shipwrecked sailor. Travis furiously tried to get the engine to start again, but I heard noises like flooding and random sputters and hiccups from the boat. "Oh my God, we're gonna die here, aren't we?" Leslie said, crying into her hands. Sadie rolled her eyes. "F that," she said, going over to Travis. "What do we have for weapons here?" I admired her bravery. Compared to her sister, she seemed like some mythical Valkyrie. Leslie continued to whimper in her hands. Both of them had eaten a sizable dose of magic mushrooms, probably at least 4 grams. Sadie's pupils were the size of quarters as Travis reached into the compartment and pulled out some fishing gear. After moving aside some lines and boxes of tackle, he found a couple of fillet knives. Their blades gleamed sharp and wicked in the dim starlight. Here, Travis said, handing one to Sadie. Shannon waded over, his shorts tied around his chubby legs. After hesitating a moment, Travis gave a knife to Shannon. What am I supposed to use? I asked. Travis grinned and pulled out a flare gun. I looked at it confused. What the hell am I supposed to do with this? This isn't the movies. I'm not even sure a flare gun can hurt anyone. This is a pretty heavy flare, man, Travis said. A heavy rope came whipping down between us, making me jump. I looked up and saw the plague ship moving slowly overhead. More ropes were thrown down, and within seconds, the first of the damned vessel's shock troopers slid down. The first creature down was a man who towered over all of us, even Travis, who was at least 6 feet tall. My friends stood around with huge pupils and staring eyes. Leslie refused to look at the loose gray skin on the abomination's face. She continued to whimper and moan like a kicked dog. I could smell sulfur, rust, and salt water oozing from the creature's mouth, along with undertones of sickly, decaying flesh. As the 5 grams of mushrooms I had eaten continued to hit me in waves, I could see the colors of the rotten odors emanating from the abomination. Blasts of cancerous black mixed with the dark red of clotted blood in my vision, forming an aura around the creature that sizzled and popped. His body looked waterlogged and swollen. Purple and black veins bulged against his soft, wet flesh. He raised a hand that reminded me of a dead, desiccated starfish. His fingers curled. I saw the nails had turned black and cracked. They oozed dark pus that dripped down the creature's hands in searching rivulets.
Where is the tribute?
The creature hissed in a drowning, gurgling voice. Salt water and blood bubbled from his cyanotic lips. I could hear my heart in my ears, slamming repeatedly against the cage of bones that held as if trying to escape from the death I knew was so near. I held the flare gun in my right hand. I now looked down at it, frowning. It looked like a useless heap of junk in my hand. More of the abominations landed on the sea lady surrounding us. The creature who had spoken grinned at us, his face seemingly frozen into a lunatic death mask.
The tribute,
the creature continued to demand. I shook my head. Travis and Sadie stood by my sides.
We don't know what you're talking about, Sadie screamed. Just leave us alone.
The creature who had spoken shook his head like a disappointed father, the rictus grin still plastered across his nightmarish face. Without another word, he raised his hand. I noticed a smell like a match being struck. The creature's hand erupted in the flame. Still smiling at me, he knelt down and touched the sea lady. Fire jumped from its hand onto the boat as if it was pumping napalm out of its fingers. Scorching lines of the rising inferno ate into the wood of the boat within seconds. I heard screaming, as if from very far away. Then I realized it was my own voice screaming. The creatures from the ship had surrounded us. With a shriek of mortal terror and bloodlust, Sadie ran forwards. At the last second, her long sleeve pulled itself up on her arm. I saw the wicked blade of the flaying knife grasped tightly into her clenched fist. She slammed the blade into the monster who continued to pump out the fire from its inhuman body. It pierced through his faded cataract eye and into his skull. He froze, the smile evaporating from its face like mist under the summer sun. Sadie continued to stare forwards in horror. She realized the intent of her mistake immediately. The creature plucked the knife out of its face. The entire sickly clouded eye came with it, dripping small black worms and squirming larvae onto the sea lady. Then it wrapped its arms around Sadie and lit her on fire. She spun with the monster as if in a dance of death. The smoke and ashes from their burning bodies mixed and rising up towards the smoke-clouded sky. Others had started to take the rest of us. I saw one dragging a shell-shocked Leslie towards the rope. She had stopped crying and now stared blankly ahead. I felt cold hands grip my back. The skin felt loose and soggy on the bones, like worms drowned after a rainstorm. I spun, raising the flare gun and firing point blank into whatever abomination attacked me. A man with a giant exit wound in the front of his chest stood there. I could see the decaying black heart beating through the wound. Tiny worms and squirming maggots ate the rough patches of torn flesh around the circumference. The flare shot into his grinning open mouth. I saw his head lit up like a jack-o'-lantern as his skull exploded. He fell limply to the side, the long tongues of flame licking his nearly headless body now. Without a moment of hesitation, I pushed through the opening I had created and jumped overboard. Fire blackened my clothes, and I felt an intense heat against my skin. Within seconds, though, the cooling water of the ocean had taken over. Without looking back, I began to swim away, hiding around the keel and moving to the far side to confuse any potential pursuers. But no undead sailors jumped into the water. I saw the Sea Lady sink. As the plague ship started off with its new load of cargo, I caught the last glimpses of my friends. They had taken Leslie and keel holder. I saw her eyes go wide as the ropes bit deeply into her ankles and wrists. She screamed in agony as flesh peeled like warm butter from her back when the undead sailors ran her up and down over the barnacles. It turned the water a bright red underneath. Another sailor pulled off the rotting figurehead from the front of the plague ship. Even though the impaled woman had clearly been dead for a long time, when they began to lift her body off of the sharp stake, her lips twitched and her eyes fluttered. Her hand clenched into a fist. The burnt figure of Sadie looked down over the side of the ship, dripping blood and yellowish pus into the salty water far below.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
She couldn't have been alive, yet she stood there. And as the ship pulled off, I thought I saw her destroyed, blackened hand waving to me. I treaded water and continued to swim around the remnants of the Sea Lady, not knowing what I could do. The mushrooms continued to make me wonder whether this was all really happening, or whether I might wake up in some sensory deprivation tank somewhere saying, "Damn, that was an intense trip." But I could tell it was very real when the first fins of the shark broke the surface of the water, circling me. They must have smelled the blood from the torture and murder of my friends. Perhaps when Leslie's blood filled the water, it had drawn them from far away. But regardless, they were here now, and they were very hungry. I clung to a piece of debris from the Sea Lady. The last remnants of its collapsing frame were quickly disappearing, sending opaque clouds of suffocating smoke all over the water. A shark's fin came within feet of me. I tried kicking at it, but it just circled. And then I heard the roaring of an engine. A spotlight broke through the shadows. I looked up quickly seen a Coast Guard vessel. I started screaming at the top of my lungs. One of the men heard me. The ship drew nearer, but more sharks had started the circle. One came in a straight line at me, shrieking. I tried to punch and kick at it, but with a cold, burning pain, I felt its teeth sink deeply into my leg. By that point, the Coast Guard had reached me. The engines had sent some of the sharks away, yet the one on my foot had me tightly in its grip. It shook its head like a dog with a toy. I felt bones splinter and saw a cloud of blood fill the water. My foot went numb. I tried to move it, but I couldn't. A shot rang out. I saw the bullet smash into the body of the shark. It released my mutilated leg, swimming off, leaving a cloud of blood in its wake. The Coast Guard men pulled me up. As I got over the edge of the railing, I looked down and realized my right foot was totally gone. Nietzsche once said, "I am the last man. Nobody talks to me as myself, and my voice comes to me like that of a dying person." I think all those who had seen far enough had felt the same desolation, the sense of echoing fading into the darkness of the mind, the crushing feeling of the serpent eating its own tail. But on the plague ship, it was different. The cycle no longer revolved behind the veil. For those who are eternally trapped there, death has no hold. For most people, a rainbow embodies hope. For the residents of my derelict seaside hometown, however, a rainbow invites only fear. Namely, fear that it might drain of color at any moment. And every 20 years, it does. The townfolk call it the Black Bow, an ominous arch that paints the sky, blotting the sun for 7 days. And the events that transpire are always unspeakably dreadful. You never see the phenomenon in national news, and it seems to be a self-contained event, something only the townfolk can see anyhow. But even if we were to tell outsiders, who would believe our story? A rainbow cannot be black or white, and the Black Bow is not really a rainbow. In late November of 2003, on the cusp of winter, I was a 14-year-old boy who was totally oblivious to the solemn faces of older townsfolk. Faces that I recall had been increasingly agitated with every passing month. "Mom's been so moody for the whole of December. We're going to stay with Grandma in London," Ronnie huffed. "I wanted to go to Anna's Christmas party with you guys. This blows." "So does your mom," Alex said. I giggled, and Ronnie kicked Alex in the shin. "You're getting the whole month off school?" I said. Ronnie shrugged. "Guess so." "Then why are you complaining?" I laughed. "If it makes you feel any better, my parents have been arguing a lot lately," Alex said. "Dad said I need to see a therapist. They think I have depression." Ronnie and I awkwardly shuffled our feet, eyeing the ground. All I could think to say was, "Shall we go to the ditch to take your mind off it?" And Alex, being a young boy who had clearly mastered the art of masking his pain with comedy, eagerly nodded his head. "Sounds good, Charlie," he said. So, we ran through the local park to the ditch, a chasm that had become a perilous playground for children in our town, and it was always busy. "Hey, Ronnie!" Anna called. Ronnie blushed and waved at his crush, who was swinging on a tire haphazardly tied to a tree. Alex pursed his lips, making a smooching noise. I snorted and Ronnie laughed. "Will you guys shut up?" our blushing friend grunted. "You know why I was so bothered about that party? I was going to ask her out, but..." A deafening crack sounded, and a chill coursed through the air, accompanied by an aggressive whistling noise. "Is it about the rain?" Anna shouted. Nobody answered. Our eyes were fixated on the shape that was forming above us. A colorless arch, larger than any rainbow I had ever seen, tore through the clouds. I waited for red, orange, yellow, or any color to appear. It didn't. There was only a towering black arch. An unmistakable monolith. It vibrated as if it was threatening to disintegrate at any moment. "What is that?" Alex whispered. "I don't know," I gulped. Anna and her friends began to walk cautiously away from the ditch. She waved nervously at Ronnie, and he smiled back before returning his gaze to the unnatural thing above us. And then his phone started ringing. "Hello?" he said. "Mom, I... What do you mean?" "Yes, I'm just at the ditch." "What?" "I'll come home and..." "Why?" "But I've..." "Okay, I'm coming home now." Flustered, Ronnie angrily thrusted his flip phone back into his pocket. "I have to go home," he said. "Mom says we're packing and going to Grandma's right now. I don't think our teachers are going to like that, but..." I pointed at the black rainbow. "Is that why she's worried?" "Yeah, I gotta go, guys. She said she'll pack for me, but I don't want her to forget my Xbox. I guess I'll see you after Christmas." Ronnie sighed, running off before we could say anything. "Jammy Dodger," Alex huffed. "Fancy a go on the tire, seeing as it's free?" "Alex, don't you care that something's wrong with the sky?" I asked. He shrugged. "It's a rainbow." It's black. I don't like this. I think we should go home too," I said. Alex sighed, hanging his head dejectedly as we walked away from the ditch. And it was when we strolled through the park gates, which were swinging furiously in the wailing wind, that we first started to notice things had changed on the ground, not just in the sky. It must have been early afternoon, but the rainbow had blackened the world beneath it. Lampposts had sprung to life. A car soared past at a frightful speed, swerving from side to side while blinding us with full beam headlights. "Idiot," I grumbled. As we followed the main road towards the town hall, the insanity only seemed to worsen. The piercing pitch of the wind had veiled the ruckus at first, but we started to discern the cries of townspeople. More cars hurtled past. That was when the rain began to fall. Black rain. So thick and heavy that it shrouded what little visibility remained in the town. It started to collect on the bulbs of lampposts and the headlights of cars, gradually easing the world into a deeper realm of darkness. And each pellet of rain felt as if it might puncture my skin. There was an ill-meaning sharpness to it, and inescapable weight. "What is this?" Alex asked, nervously eyeballing the black, stoggly substance collecting in his palms. "I don't know," I said, pulling my hood up. "But I think that we need to get home and check that our parents are okay before..."
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Or we struggled to even see 2 feet in front of ourselves. "Yeah, I think..." Alex started. He was interrupted by the horrifying sound of metal coiling itself around something immovable. And we both snapped our necks around the sea in the thick of the black downpour. A crumpled Prius. It had melded with the town sign in the center square, narrowly missing us. "That looks like Dad's car," Alex cried. I silently shivered on the spot, and it was a great shock to witness the mangled driver's side door creakily swinging open. There was the terrible sound of misshapen metal grinding against misshapen metal. Other than the cacophony of rainfall, It seemed to be the only sound in the empty town square. Every smart soul had fled. From the wreckage, a bloody man fell onto the grass caked in colorless sludge, and he supported himself with shaky arms. The dying light scarcely illuminated the figure, but the car, even as a distorted wreckage in the dark, was familiar. It looked like Alex's father. Moments before the world entirely plunged into darkness, we got a good look at his face. But it wasn't the view that answered our burning question. The only remaining feature was his mouth. And when the man parted his lips to scream, that mouth suddenly widened, splitting his head open like a raw egg.
"Weak!"
he screeched at an inhuman wail.
"Dad?" Alex whispered.
The rain stopped. It had coated the road and lampposts in a stubbornly sludgy layer of unidentifiable horror. The sky was pitch black. Even the black bow was no longer visible. Pockets of light pierced the blackened, rain-smeared windows of the houses. But Alex and I were well and truly in the dark, and all we could hear was the labored breathing of the thing that used to be his father.
"We need to run,"
I whimpered in horror, seizing my friend's arm in a vice-like grip. I could barely see the pavement in front of me, let alone the abomination from the car wreckage. But that was good. It meant he couldn't see us either. I hoped he couldn't see anything, given he only had a mouth. Then again, I could no longer be sure of anything.
"He was talking to me,"
Alex muttered. I ignored my friend, guiding him by the arm through blackened streets. I was grateful for the darkness. It concealed the horrors that we could only hear.
"The black bow's early. Why is it so early?"
one man cried, slamming a car door.
"Move! Get behind us!"
a woman replied loudly. And farther down the road,
"Please, Lucy, please!"
another woman screamed.
"You'll hear me now, mother!"
a guttural voice shrieked.
"He's not my father, and he'll never be my father!"
The sound of screaming quickly gave way to squelching. My body started to tighten. A new type of fear gripped me. Something beyond primal horror. Whatever was happening, it was beyond anything a person should experience. "He said that to me once," Alex said.
"What?"
I asked, absent-mindedly scanning streets, trying to navigate a lightless world.
He apologized, but he said men are supposed to be strong, and depression is a sign of weakness,"
Alex muttered, sniffling.
"But then he must have realized he had said too much, or Mom told him off. I don't know. He apologized. Said I needed to see a shrink."
"I'm sorry, Alex," I said, guiding us down the road I was certain would lead me to my parents' house.
"It's him, Alex," he whispered. "Just from that word, weak, I knew it was him."
Before I could respond, the sound of a scuffle ahead caused me to stop in my tracks, placing my arm in front of Alex. We could barely see one another, but I held a cautious finger up to my lips.
"Ronnie, please!"
a girl screamed. Anna. We could scarcely see them in the darkness, but there were two silhouettes in the middle of the road. And as the head of one figure seemed to separate down the middle, I felt a sickness in my gut.
"Why won't you just drink, bitch?"
the thing snarled.
"Ronnie, what's... something's wrong with your... please let me go!"
Anna whimpered.
"Girls, leading boys on, say one thing but mean another,"
the creature growled. As Alex and I cautiously waded through the black puddle to the other side of the street, I could faintly distinguish the thing prying open Anna's mouth with its fingers. She struggled and squirmed, like trying to close her lips, but it was no use. I watched in fright as Ronnie shoveled black sludge from the road into her open mouth.
"It'll stop hurting soon,"
he said in a soft growl.
"Thank you. That was all I wanted.
Alex and I were sobbing as quietly as possible, and I was grateful yet again for the cloak of darkness, shielding us from the majority of the horror. But I still saw too much, far too much. Anna was sobbing too, for half a minute or so. And then her sobs changed into laughter, or mania.
"I frickin' hate you,"
she growled. Thankfully, at that moment, I reached a house with distinctive windows. The glass panes were coated in black rain, but given the light cast through the murkiness onto our front lawn, the shape of the house was familiar. It had to be my home. And when I bumped into the gate leading onto the front path, I was entirely certain. I let go of Alex's arm for a second. Only a second.
"Son?"
a voice bellowed. I spun around and couldn't see Alex anymore. I could hear the faint sound of feet wading through the black puddle.
"Alex!"
I hissed through gritted teeth, not wanting to ingest any droplets of that rain that might emerge.
"Come on, my house is right."
"Go, Charlie,"
he interrupted, whimpering.
"Is that you, insect?"
His father's voice roared from the far end of the street.
"Crying again?"
"I know this isn't you, Dad," Alex called. "It's this thing."
"Keep your mouth closed, Alex,"
I hissed again. Anna giggled.
"Nobody likes him at school."
"He's always been weak, Mr. Harding,"
Ronnie chimed in.
"The bow said so." "The bow never lies,"
Alex's father said.
"It will make a real man of you, Alex. No more weakness."
"Dad, I want to help you. If we could just take you home,"
Alex said, waiting farther away from me.
"Home? This is our home,"
his father laughed.
"Where's Mom?"
Alex asked. I wanted to wait after him, but I was afraid. I didn't want to die. I knew somehow that Mr. Harding, Ronnie, and Anna could not be saved. But Alex? He didn't seem to care. Looking back, I could see that my friend was lost in whatever thoughts plagued him. So lost, he didn't notice the reality slipping from him. And I suppose the Black Bow wanted him for that very reason. It feeds despair and cruelty into our minds. It fuels blackened thoughts that lie dormant in there.
"In the garden,"
his father said. Alex cried, and I heard the sound of multiple footsteps wading ever closer. Meanwhile, I was quietly inching the gate open, and then the waiting ceased.
"Bye, Charlie,"
Alex whispered. A scuffle commenced, too darkened for me to distinguish. But I could hear Alex choking, much as Anna had. I knew that the bow would take him too. I fumbled in my pocket for my keys, crying inwardly as I heard Alex's cries subside. I thrust them into the lock, pushing the door open. And as I turned to close it behind me, the light from our front hallway illuminated the exterior of my house. Just beyond the gate, I could see them. Alex, Ronnie, Anna, and Mr. Harding, standing four abreast. Heads transformed into ghoulish, wide-mouthed monstrosities. I slammed the door, locking it, and turning to see two fully-faced, crying parents running towards me. I left that town long ago, as most do.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
My parents moved there in 87, so they had never seen nor heard of the Black Bow. And that's why I don't blame them for what had happened. We would later learn about the ominous black rainbow from the real estate agent who sold the house to us. A little old man named Arnold, a man who had fled town with others as the bow formed on that day in 2003. My father pinned him against the wall until he spilled all of his secrets.
"Yes, I knew about it,"
he said.
83, 63, 43. It shows every 20 years, but you wouldn't have believed me. Nobody believes it until they see it for themselves.
"Yeah, well, you could have not sold this house to us," my father screamed.
"This is my life, Mr. Carlson. My home. I have to make a living. And is the ugliness really that bad? It only lasts for 7 days every 20 years. The rest of the time, this is the most beautiful town in the world, a slice of paradise by the sea,"
he said. "Why would you stay here? Why would anyone?" my father cried.
"Because we know not to drink it," he said. "Just don't drink it and everything will be okay. The storm passes. It always passes."
But that answer always pains me. My father asked the right question. Why would some stay? Perhaps they've come to believe the bow's lies. Perhaps that place is doomed to repeat its cycle. And I know that any day now, the Black Rainbow will return.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.